Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
The 10th caller at 800-636-1067. Congrats, you're winning a pair of tickets to see The Weeknd. It's the After Hours Tour, Saturday, August 2nd at Northwest Stadium with Playboi Carti and Mike Dean. Tickets are on sale Friday, February 7th. That is coming up later this week at 10 a.m. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com. We're Grant and Danny. You are locked into The Fan. We're taking you up to 6:30 live and local this evening. We've got Ed McCaffrey joining us in just about 10 minutes. That's Luke's papa, former Super Bowl champion wideout with the Denver Broncos. Of course, he's also the dad of Christian McCaffrey. I've heard so many great stories, Danny, about him as a football dad growing up and some of the things he had Luke's do. So I just want to talk to him about some of those, so that should be a good time.
Pulling kids out of school to get IVs, no jeans on game days because it makes sure it's heavy on your legs. Just stuff like that is awesome.
The best. Cynthia Freeland, who does a lot of analytics for NFL media, going to be good to talk to her about the fourth down decisions of Dan Quinn and Washington kind of joining the teams that actually care about analytics this year. Not coincidentally when they decided to be good finally, which was quite a development. And then we'll talk to Mitch Holtis, the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs, all coming up in short order here live from Radio Row in New Orleans. But it is time for our Beltway Blitz. So let's kick things off with some of the teams you care the most about in town. And we got to start with the Wiz today because they pulled off a big trade. Kyle Kuzma's on the move to the Milwaukee Bucks. Greg Finberg joins us now. Bullets Forever is where you can see some of his work. Greg, why don't you tell us what you thought about the trade and what Washington is getting back?
Yeah, so this is a typical Will Dawkins, Michael Winger rebuild type of trade, sending out Kyle Kuzma for a bad salary and an older player in Chris Middleton, but in exchange taking on a first-round pick swap and a young player in A.J. Johnson. Essentially, Kuzma's time in D.C. was done. After his comments made after he dropped 30 in Phoenix, he kind of made it seem like he was done playing for the development of others and wanted to move. There are reports that he asked out behind the scenes. He gets his wish. He goes to a contender in Milwaukee. And in return, Washington gets back Chris Middleton, who, is getting up there, 33 years old, making $31 million this year, a $34 million player option that will pick up the following year. But the main part of the trade for the Wizards is A.J. Johnson, probably a lesser-known prospect, but was the 23rd pick in the draft just this past year. Still 20 years old, 6'5", 160. Very raw, still has a long ways to go, hasn't really played much, just 45 minutes in the NBA this season. But another high-upside prospect, and that makes it 4 first-round picks from the past NBA draft that the Wizards have. They had the number 2 pick in Alex Saar, 14 Bob Carrington, the 23rd pick now in A.J. Johnson, and the 24th pick with Keyshawn George. So it's pretty clear that this trade aligns with everything Dawkins is trying to do, shipping out a older player like Kuzma and in return getting a 20-year-old in Johnson and trying to stockpile as many pick swaps, as many young players as he possibly can.
Greg, here's my view, and I want you to weigh in. I think they gamble, talking about the Wizards, that Kuzma would thrive this year and his value would be higher than it would have been this past offseason or even last year at the trade deadline. I was actually surprised they didn't trade him last year at the deadline. And at times, frankly to me, he looked disinterested. At times, whether he was not healthy or otherwise, wasn't until only recently that kind of business picked up for him and he started putting the ball in the basket and kind of playing hard at both ends. I actually thought he was playing a lot better. But most of the season just kind of looked like he didn't really feel like it. I mean, again, I'm not questioning effort. I have no idea what was going on, but it didn't look real good. And I think he hurt his value, so the Wizards kind of maybe didn't get what they could have had they done this previously. A gamble, I understand, but, you know, it may not have been the haul that they could have gotten potentially at earlier times. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a great point. It's kind of the one mark on the armor of Will Dawkins in the front office so far. Had a chance to trade him for a first-round pick at least to Dallas last year. Decided not to. Thought that they maybe could get more, overplayed their hand a bit. And now they look back at it, and he had a really bad season, one of the worst, probably the worst since he left L.A. Tanked that value completely. You mentioned, you know, it didn't seem like he showed up, you know, prepared. There were a lot of air balls. He played really bad in preseason and even to begin the season before he kind of found his stride in these last couple of games. But at the same time, his time in D.C. was coming towards its end. Even when he re-signed after they had traded Bradley Beal and Porzingis, he had maintained that he wanted to stay in D.C. and kind of build this throughout. But most fans kind of, you know, called that bluff because, you know, he's 28 years old. Most of the players on this team worth keeping are around 20 to 20, 21, 22. So it did seem like his time was up, but the Wizards should have traded him a while ago. They didn't, but I do think at a certain point you got to just accept your mistakes and kind of move on and get what you can get. And it seems like the Wizards did that here, knowing that, yeah, they should have gotten something more last year at the deadline, but they got probably the best offer they could have. Maybe could have gotten more draft compensation instead of A.J. Johnson, but it makes it pretty clear that since they were holding out for Johnson, you know, Will Dawkins clearly takes a liking to him and thinks that he has a lot more upside than maybe, you know, another couple second-round picks could have gone the Wizards.
Greg, thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Good insight. Greg Finberg on the Wizards. Kyle Kuzma today traded to the Milwaukee Bucks. Let's talk football. Fitting as we are on Radio Row in New Orleans getting ready for Super Bowl 59. Benjamin Brown joins us. Benjamin, how do you handicap this matchup between probably a more talented Eagles team and a Chiefs team that never seems to allow that to matter?
Yeah, it's, you know, obviously it's kind of been the same story for quite some time with the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, the trump card being Patrick Mahomes. You know, what does Andy Reid provide as well? There is this, you know, measure of greatness that we maybe try to, we kind of struggle to price in the upper bounds of that. I think you've seen that narrative kind of play out with other great quarterbacks from Tom Brady and Peyton Manning on through kind of, you know, outperforming even the spread market expectation for a lot of their games over their entire career. So I think in a lot of ways, like, we still don't know the magnitude of the quarterback coaching combination that those two provide in comparison to what is very much, you know, a much deeper roster, much more talented. I don't want to say much more talented, but much better defense in a lot of areas that can match up well against the Kansas City Chiefs. So I still, I would say, kind of lean in the Chiefs' direction. To me, you know, I think the betting market and everything you hear right now has taken on a lot of Philadelphia Eagles money. We haven't moved, I would say, too dramatically off of the -1.5. I think for that reason, you know, I think we're still in the right spot if you are on the Kansas City Chiefs side of things, because it does seem like that is the quieter, you know, less volume but higher dollar amount, I think, for this Super Bowl matchup coming up here on Sunday.
Yeah, and Benjamin, kind of to the point about Kansas City, this is a number that I can't get over when you start looking at some of the data, the numbers, etc. They have a worse point differential as a 15-2 team, the best record of this era that they've had, than one of those Alex Smith 9-7 teams that had no future and no ceiling and was just there to check it down and then lose in the postseason. And it's no longer coincidence. It's no longer an accident that they are winning these one-score games, whatever the number in a row is, 17, 18. I can't remember. But it seems to be by design, and you trust them in those kinds of spots.
Yeah, very, very much. So I think you know, obviously in comparing, like, you know, the raw numbers based on, you know, points differential and those sort of things, like, there are going to be gaps in the system. And I do think, you know, for what we at least have known and learned about the Kansas City Chiefs over the past, you know, especially two seasons after moving on from Tyreek Hill, this has been a situation where they're kind of trying to win by shortening the game, right? And I think they're having long, sustained drives, keeping their offense on the field, but really trying to minimize the amount of possessions that the other teams have, and then are kind of capable of just winning it at the end. And it has been, you know, whether their defense can get a stop or offensively with, you know, Patrick Mahomes driving the football, they haven't really ever felt the need to keep their foot on the gas pedal. I think in a lot of ways also, it might be overblown at this point in time, but even the ways in which Andy Reid approaches from a play calling standpoint does seem to dictate take the fashion in which they are not necessarily separating from a lot of these other teams, but they are still consistently winning. And I think for that reason, you know, we continue to kind of see these tight spreads, but I don't really want to say it should be different between, you know, -1.5, -2.5 for the Chiefs right now. But I really think if you get in anything below three, I really think that is a spot where you do want to play the side of Kansas City Chiefs. And just the fact that they have done this so consistently for the past couple of seasons, and it does seem like, you know, the pendulum and so many people have kind of swung in the other direction with the Philadelphia Eagles as we move closer to the kickoff time.
Benjamin Brown talking NFL football. Must we the Beltway Blitz. Thank you, buddy. We appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. Have a great show.
See you, pal.
You got it. There is your Beltway Blitz on Grant and Danny here on The Fan live from Radio Row in New Orleans. Just saw this breaking NFL news. Press release was just put out. It was announced out here in New Orleans today, Danny. The NFL is headed to Melbourne, Australia.
Australia, dude.
They're going to host their first ever NFL regular season game in Australia in 2026. So not this coming season, but the following year. I know this is just inevitable, and the league is going to play on every continent in every country before you and I are gone from this rock, but that's a long, long trip. That one, to me, feels like a game that everyone will dread. We already know that the Rams are in. I'm assuming there's some kind of cronky thing where he volunteered or wanted his team there.
Yeah, it's their territory, quote-unquote. It's their marketing territory. They're given that one because, I guess, the proximity. I put that in quotes. Yeah.
I'm sure, by the way, about proximity, mm-hmm. right? Like, you guys are so close.
Yeah, San Fernando Valley, you know, the other side of the world. Right.
But there is something, too. Like, the Jaguars have a huge following in London now because they play the most games there, and they were the first one on Plymouth Rock, so to speak. So if you're able to put your flag down, there's global growth. There's a lot of money that can be had. Look at the NBA as an example. Whereas the popularity is taking a big hit with grown-ups and adults in this country, young people, it's doing better. But globally, it's so healthy that yep. the conversation about the NBA is that the popularity is skyrocketing. That's not really what's happening at the water cooler in the average workplace in America necessarily. But I bring this up to say we've talked about London, which comparatively handful of hours is like flying to the West Coast for East Coast teams. Doesn't seem like a big deal. We've talked about now games in Spain and different places. Melbourne, Australia, man. Isn't that like an 18-hour flight?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's around the world. There's
what team, what player wants to do that? That's insane.
It's, you know, you're losing a couple of days, basically, the you know, adjustment to the time, and then, of course, the actual time to travel. So that's on both ends. So that's enormous. I hate that, but, again, the league doesn't care. There are only so many more veins you can tap here in the States. And they'll keep doing it. I mean, they'll keep growing the game and, you know, slowly but surely adding in, you know, larger and larger audiences and an ever-shrinking media pie where fewer and fewer people are sitting down and actually just watching a game on television. Everybody consumes things differently, especially young people. But they're going to keep all their innovative ideas, have the Nickelodeon slime games and, you know, put stuff on streaming services as everybody kind of does. But this is where their emerging marketplace can be. They look at international soccer. Right now, a few countries have like their leagues, and it's like the obsession with their local teams, et cetera. But the way that soccer is globally, like people in, I don't know, you could pick your country, are obsessed with Brazilian stars. People in this place around the world, thousands of miles away, who don't live in Manchester, love Manchester City and Holland, or they love Messi or whatever. Right? They want that. They're looking at that as their next growth opportunity. And you know, curmudgeons like me are going to say, but that's not fair to the players. You know, you can complain on your yacht, I guess, is kind of will be their retort. Like, that's what they're doing here, is they're trying to find new growth opportunities, and there aren't that many left in the States.
Stan Kroenke was quoted as saying, when we first identified Australia as one of our global markets, it was not only because of our passionate fans who reside there, but also because of the important role L.A. plays in serving as a gateway to Australia and many countries across the Pacific. Today is an exciting day for the Rams fans across the world. It sounds like maybe he was one of the driving forces mm-hmm. really pushed for this. The designated home team in Australia in 2026, the Rams, headed to Australia. They will play their game at the Melbourne Cricket Ground, the MCG. So for all you Australian listeners, that one guy I met at a Capitals game that one time who mm-hmm. listens every day to the podcast.
Nathan Walker's buddy, probably.
Nathan Walker.
There it is.
They are coming your way. Speaking of which, Ed McCaffrey, I believe, is coming our way. He should be joining us in moments on Radio Row today from New Orleans. It's hopping. There are football stars all around us. I can see 6-7 Pro Bowlers from my view just right now. It's very, very cool to be a part of this football bash. Grant and Danny with you, coming back with Ed McCaffrey on The Fan. Back in New Orleans at Radio Row ahead of Super Bowl 59. Grant and Danny with you on The Fan. Danny's holding down the fort back in D.C. It's part of our broadcast from our Half Street studios. I'm out here live, joined now by a former three-time Super Bowl champion and Pro Bowler who I remember. Now, I don't want to. I always feel like people are like, you're making me feel old. One of my first favorite wide receivers in the league, I will say, as a young guy growing up. Ed McCaffrey, who's now got Christian McCaffrey, his son, who's tearing it up with the 49ers, and a second son in D.C. with us, who we have on the show pretty frequently, Luke McCaffrey. So the family is doing pretty well, I would say, second generation.
Yeah, I was excited to root for the Commanders. Got to go to every single home game, went to a couple of the away games down in Tampa Bay, and went to Detroit, and it was a whole lot of fun. I'm so excited that the fan base is picking back up. For the Commanders, and what a magical season. Dan Quinn came in, did a phenomenal job. Jaden Daniels was more than you could even have advertised. Luke got to come in and play with him in his rookie year, and loves his teammates, love the culture, love what they're doing there. They came so close. They had such a phenomenal season and came so close to getting to this game. But I think everybody's pretty optimistic and feels good about the future.
How do you think Luke's going to grow in this offense kind of going forward?
It's all about reps. Look, it's hard as a rookie to break in with on a football team, especially a team that had a lot of veterans. Luke loved the receiver room. The guys in the room were awesome, obviously headlined by Terry McLaurin. A lot of good veterans on the team. Ben Sinnott was good at tight end as well. Tough to earn your stripes and get on the field as a rookie, but I think it was such a wonderful experience for him. He was confident. He was ready to make a play. He was ready, so he didn't have to get ready if they called upon him. But the team had a lot of success doing a lot of different things, and there was a lot of talented, skilled guys with more experience on the field. So he's hungry. He's hungry this year to be the best player that he can be so he can contribute, get on the field, and make plays for his team. So this is a really important offseason for him. Like every rookie coming out of college, you go right to training for the combine, training for pro day, then all of a sudden you're in mini camp. It's the longest year of your life. Didn't feel like a long season to him. He was ready to keep playing. But in terms of not having that full offseason to grow and develop and to focus only on football, not on running a 40-yard dash, not on the 5-10-5, but only on football, he's going to get to do that. So I expect him to really improve leaps and bounds from his first year to his second.
Three-time Super Bowl champion, former All-Pro Ed McCaffrey is with us on Radio Row in New Orleans, talking about his son Luke, who's going in and out year two in Washington at wide receiver with the Commanders. You mentioned something that's interesting. I think for a lot of guys, that idea of how hard that first year is to get those reps and opportunities. And he did a lot with a little early. I think he caught the first 12 passes thrown to him this year without any kind of issues. And then as the year went on, his role seemed to, at least late, turn into almost exclusively kick returning. He's been around the game so long with you, with Christian. He might understand that better than a young guy, but did you have to kind of counsel him a little bit and say, hey, man, it's okay. This is part of it. It's going to happen this way. Or did those conversations not need to happen?
No, he wants to play. He wants to be on the field. He wants to have passes thrown his way, just like every receiver. I was talking to A.J. Brown the other day for the Eagles, and he's a Pro Bowl caliber guy, right? And he's going to play in the Super Bowl. But the Eagles are one of the teams that have the fewest pass attempts on the season. He's a guy that's hungry.
They got him reading books on the sideline.
Right? He's reading a book. But it speaks to the mental strength you have to be a pro athlete, but especially to be a receiver, right? You don't call the play. You're not the quarterback. You can't throw yourself the ball. You have to stay ready for when you get that opportunity. I was proud of Luke for doing that all year long because it is hard to go a quarter, two quarters, a game, two games without a catch, and then all of a sudden a ball's getting thrown your way. But that's the challenge of every receiver. But Luke, just like everyone else, when you play that position, you want the football. So what you got to do is you got to keep working hard. You got to keep earning it in practice. And when you get those opportunities, you got to make the most of them.
and McCaffrey with us here on Grant and Danny. And let us not forget that Luke was a quarterback like an hour and a half ago, you know, and he's doing this in the NFL as a rook. Were you ever on a team like this one here in Washington, Ed, where pundits, you know, pudgy idiots like me are saying, yeah, maybe 7 wins, we'll say, and you just keep punching above your weight class and talent doesn't really seem to matter and you find yourself on a magical ride? Did you ever have an experience like this?
No, mine was a lot different. I played with Hall of Famers and guys that were already established. So I was drafted by the New York Football Giants. They just won the Super Bowl. So I joined the team right after they beat the Bills.
91 rookie
year.
Yeah,
and so we're talking Lawrence Taylor. They were the oldest team in the NFL. Lawrence Taylor, Phil Sims, Carl Banks. We had O.J. Anderson at running back, right? I mean, we had all kinds of great players. Bill Belichick was the defensive coordinator. Bill Parcells, the head coach. They set a record for time of possession in the game. They were cover two defense, ground and pound. Running attack, the leading wide receiver. Here's some trivia. Who do you think, which wide receiver led the team in receiving, and how many catches did they have?
Let's see. With the Giants?
New York Football Giants, 1990 Super Bowl champions. They won the Super Bowl 91.
I wouldn't know who it would have been, but I'll say 85 catches.
Whoa, what a great guess. No, you're a little high.
50-something,
Stephen,
I think.
Stephen Touchdown Maker Baker led the team as a wide receiver with 5 touchdowns. And Mark Ingram, senior, also tied for the most catches by a wide receiver with 26.
Oh, my gosh.
On the season. Did you think that was one game? That was on the season, right? So that's the type of team I joined. But they were the oldest team in the league. They had Hall of Famers on the team. They had Pro Bowlers. And they had just won a Super Bowl. Most of those guys were on 2 Super Bowl championship teams in the past few years
before
I joined the team. But then I go to San Francisco.
Yeah, for 1 year, though.
One year.
What happened?
I was there 7 months, picked up a ring, my first Super Bowl ring. But that was the Steve
Young. Did you sign
Young
a 1 year deal? Or?
Yeah, I had a 1 year deal. But I was intentional. I asked to try out for the 49ers because I wanted to play on a team that had a chance to win the Super Bowl. I was cut by the Giants, and of the teams that I had to try out for, I wanted to go for it, believe in myself, and try out for the 49ers, and thank goodness I did. It was not easy. It was very tough competition. I was able to make the team, learned a lot backing up Jerry Rice. Steve Young was hungry. You know, he had just replaced Joe Montana a year or two before. He hadn't won a Super Bowl yet, and he was hungry. That was a team that had 14 Pro Bowlers on the team. We had the Offensive Player of the Year in Steve Young, the Defensive Player of the Year in Deion Sanders, and I was able to be on a team, made lifelong friends on that team. But it wasn't a new team, wasn't a rookie quarterback, wasn't a new head coach. These guys were established. Parcells had been there, won a couple Super Bowls. George Seifert, that was his second Super Bowl that he won as head coach. A lot of the players were on the team. Then I go to the Denver Broncos. Guess who I had a quarterback for the Denver Broncos?
That's Elway.
John Elway.
Some Elway guy?
He was already a Hall of Famer when I joined the team. I played for his dad, Jack, at Stanford and thought the world of him and was blessed to get a chance to play with him. Mike Shanahan was the OC in San Francisco, saw something in me working hard in practice, brought me to Denver, gave me a chance to compete for a starting position. Luckily, I became a starter, and we went on to win 2 Super Bowls in Denver. So 3 Super Bowls in 5 years, but they were all with experienced veteran players. Now, we had some young guys. Terrell Davis was young. Right? He ended up being the MVP and a 2,000-yard rusher and a Hall of Famer. Shannon Sharpe was on the team. But I never, to answer your question, I was never on like a team with a brand-new head coach and a rookie quarterback and a lot of young players where you had to change the culture, right? For me, the culture was there, and hopefully I was added to the mix to help the team. And I loved all the teams that I played for, but it was a totally different experience than what we saw in Washington. A new head coach. Now, he'd been a head coach before. Dan Quinn's an experienced head coach. I vetted him. I was asking all kinds of players that played for him on other teams. They love him. And all the team, all the players, offense and defense, that I talked to after the game, after the Commanders game, had nothing but great things to say about their head coach. But they did have a lot of young players, starting with their quarterback. You got to get that position right. You got to get the quarterback position right. It starts with ownership. Got to give credit to Washington's ownership, right? They hired the right head coach. They brought in the right players. They bought into the culture. They got it right at the quarterback position. And that's what enabled them to have some success. And so I'm excited about the future. I know it's a game, right? Like, I think the average team has a 60% turnover rate per year, something like that. Half the team might be gone, but they have a lot of really key players and a lot of young players in position to ensure that they have success moving forward.
Ed McCaffrey's with us on Grant and Danny. One of the times we had Luke on this season, he was telling us some of the things he did in high school based on your mentorship and your counsel. And we found that they were hilarious and awesome.
So cool.
Let's play a little fact or fiction.
Oh, no.
He might have been exaggerating on some of these. Fact or fiction, He was not supposed to wear jeans on Friday game days because they would make his legs tired.
Fiction.
That never happened.
I never said that. I don't. Let me. In my defense, right?
I loved it. I thought that was great.
There were a lot of things that I recommended that they do. I never made them do anything.
Okay, good.
And I'm a dad, right? So like.
Well, you're not just a dad. In fairness,
yeah, I'm a dad.
You're
three-time
good,
Super Bowl champion who knows what he's talking about.
I'm a dad, but I'm also retaliatory. So you know how like a parent, if a kid asks them something, you want to just give them an answer. So for instance. I mean, they might have been gaslighting me a little bit. So if they said, look, you know, it's really hot all day long, these sweatpants are, like, cutting off my shirt. I'm like, well, wear sweatpants. Like, it might have been something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't like, and now you have to wear. They make me, like, sound like the great Santini, right? Like, you have to wear these sweatpants. I never made them do anything. I'm like, but if they asked me, maybe I gave some advice.
Maybe you
right?
said jeans are going to make the legs more tight.
Yeah, and they were young, and I wasn't thinking that they'd remember the things I told them or said later on and hold it against me. So I may have said, well, if your jeans are tight and, you know, wear sweatpants. That's something that you could do. But, you know, they make it sound like I made them do that, man. I was not, I promise I wasn't that type of dad.
Okay, how about this one? This one I think has got to be true, and this one's great. He would get out of school on game days to do some IVs.
Luke didn't do a whole lot of that, but okay. he probably did it a couple times during when they had night games. Christian did more of it because he was playing offense, defense, special teams, didn't leave the field. And one time Christian had cramped during a night game because he really didn't leave the field. He was playing every play. And so I thought, well, for night games, maybe we'll get him an IV because they're on their feet all day. They're kids.
Yeah.
Like, you can stay
mm-hmm.
hydrated, sure, but what kid does? You're on your feet
no
all day.
Chance.
You're at
right.
school. You don't eat dinner after. You know, you go right to the game after school, and you get dehydrated. Then you play 90 or 100 snaps, and you could get dehydrated. So after he cramped up one game, Christian would get some IVs. Luke probably got a couple, not too many. But, they're not mandatory. I'm not, like, holding them down.
I don't think anyone thinks
I'm not holding
that,
them down and sticking a needle
them.
In their arm.
No.
Good
like, I think it's viewed more complimentary, I think, as, like, you know, you helped them get where they got by way of some of your knowledge. If they were to play head-to-head, so it would be San Francisco, Washington, or whatever, how do you guys handle that, you and the wife? I mean, is it, like, jerseys that are sewn in half, or how would you do it?
Yeah, well, you know, we obviously root for both of our kids. You know, I gave up hoping and praying for wins a long time ago. My hope for them is that when they leave the field, they can look their teammates and coaches in the eye and get the respect from the guys that matter to them, knowing they did everything they could to help their team win. So regardless of winning or losing, that's what we hope for. And I don't know. We've had our teams play before, I believe. Doesn't Washington play the Dolphins? My oldest son coaches for the Dolphins. I think they're on our schedule next year.
That's true. I didn't even think about
right,
it.
That's right.
Yeah.
So now we got a coach and a player, so it's a little different. I'm thankful that they were all offensive players. It would be harder, I think, if they had to physically go against each other, like a receiver DB or an O-lineman D-line.
Oh, that'd be tough.
Yeah. That would be tough. So luckily, they're all offensive players, so they're not on the field at the same time. And I root for them, and I root for their teams, but we're not hoping and praying for anybody to win. Just really – if you feel great about your effort and your teammates and coaches feel great about your contribution, that's the most you can ask for. And that's really, when I played, that was the ultimate compliment. You know, win, lose, or draw, we're in this together. We're in it for our team. You know, you're not my brother on game day, like for about 3.5 hours. We're competing against each other. But afterwards, you know, we love each other, hug each other up, and are always rooting for each other.
And let me sneak this one in about the receiver spot that you know so well. There have been great ones throughout, obviously, throughout history. I mean, in your era, Jerry Rice, Tim Brown, James Lofton, millions of others. I feel like right now, though, maybe it's recency bias, I feel like we're in the golden age of receiver. Every team has a badass that's like unstoppable, number one in the scouting report. Does it feel that way to you?
I think a lot of teams have more than one badass.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can talk about the evolution of the game. When I played, 21 personnel was pretty basic. Like, that was a pro formation, pro personnel grouping. You had 21 personnel, 12 personnel. Nowadays, there's way more up-tempo teams. Like, look at Washington, right? Up-tempo.
No huddle. Yeah.
Yeah, play 3 and 4 receivers a lot. Although we did play a ton of 11, 12, and even 13 personnel, which was surprising. I was impressed with how they handled those bigger personnel groupings. But, you know, kids grow up at 6 years old playing flag football now. You know, I mean, and so there's different offenses, right? There's the pro-style offense, and then there's the up-tempo spread offense. Sometimes in the spread offense, a really good receiver can get lost because you're run into space and it's up to the quarterback to throw to the open receiver based on what the defense is doing. One of the things I thought Cliff Kingsbury did a great job of this year was, because early on, you remember Terry McLaurin wasn't getting that many targets the first couple games.
Oh, we remember well.
And
oh, yeah.
What he did was he started moving them around. He put him in the slot. He moved him from the left where he was stuck over to the right a couple of different times. And he combined his offense, which is an up-tempo spread offense, with creating matchups for Terry McLaurin. And I think that's what great coaches have to do. It's like, hey, you have your scheme, but you also, in the NFL, at the highest level, have to take advantage of matchups when you can. Thought he did a really good job of that as the year went on.
Ed, thank you so much. This has been a treat, and you should be very proud. I will tell you, you know, I've thoroughly enjoyed getting to know Luke, but he's such a good kid and good guy. And, you know, in that locker room, they love him. But just my interactions with him, just a pro already. So you should be very, very proud.
As a dad, that's good to hear. So
yeah,
100%. I don't know unless somebody tells me, so I appreciate it.
We have really, really enjoyed it.
I think I'll keep him.
You should. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you should get him those IVs. No, I'm just kidding. Ed McCaffrey. And I will tell you again, because it's funny. You were like, I didn't make him do that. I don't think anyone thought you were, like, forcing them not to wear jeans.
Some people think that.
Do they?
Some people think you made him get up. Like, I didn't make anybody do anything.
Dragged him out of school in a half Nelson. You know, like.
Yeah, you're like,
They asked me for advice, and by the way, I don't even to this day. Like, I watch every play that every one of my kids plays, every play that, you know, they're coaching, but I don't volunteer information. It's really tough. I coached all my kids at one point, and I had to learn when to take the coaching cap off, and when to be a dad, and not to be a coach.
You wait for them to come to you.
If they ask me for advice, I'm ready with it. Like, there's things I'm thinking about,
yeah,
but I will not say it unless they ask me for the advice. And it's tough to be a father, that played the game that they play, to be a father and coach at times. And so for me, Luke is very inquisitive. Christian's very inquisitive. They're asking questions all the time. But as a dad, I wait for them to ask.
Well, we love having him in D.C., and I can't wait for next year, hopefully, breakout. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, got it. Ed McCaffrey on Grant and Danny on The Fan. I talked earlier today with Kyle Rudolph about Zach Ertz and his renaissance this season at the tight end position, why the tight end is so helpful to the young quarterback around the league. We will talk about that next right here on The Fan. How good was Ed McCaffrey, Danny?
Awesome.
That was great.
I almost wish that all those things were so true. Do you know what I mean? I almost wish he was like, yeah, don't wear jeans on Friday, bro. Or like, yeah, if you're playing a night game, you got to get your IV. I'm signing you right out of history class, you know?
Well, but, to me, it sounded like there was truth to those things. He just didn't like the idea that people are acting like he was like Michael Jackson's dad.
Yeah, crazy stage dad making his kids do it or something. Yeah.
But he definitely acknowledged his kids left school to get IVs. He definitely acknowledged if they asked him, he told them probably you shouldn't wear jeans. Like, I think
so
there's a lot of truth in that Venn diagram, it would appear. Zach Ertz had a great season. We, at the beginning of the year, both thought it was a lock he was going to miss a bunch of time, that he was a risk to be injured. You had a lot of issues early on with his lack of playmaking ability after the catch. But as the year went on, I think he won people over 100%. Little by little in town.
Had a
because
great
of what
finish,
he did.
Right?
Yeah, it was huge. But also what he did in the locker room, how he was as a leader. Mm-hmm. But, yes, you look at, you know, a 6-catch, 72-yard, 2-touchdown game against the Falcons with the game-winner walk-off in overtime. The touchdown against the Cowboys that they needed. The touchdown against the Lions in a 5-catch playoff game. He had a third and fourth down conversion against Tampa Bay. He had 11 catches for 100 yards in the NFC title game. I mean, just monstrous red zone presence. Wanted to kind of get some insight on him this deep into his career. And I saw Kyle Rudolph walking around today. Rudolph, who came into the league at a similar time, former Notre Dame star. Kyle Rudolph, who, of course, cut his teeth with the Minnesota Vikings. And I had a nice conversation with him about Zach Ertz's breakout, but also the tight end position in the NFL and where it's headed. It seems like that is the spot that teams care the most about figuring out quickly when they're going to a young quarterback on offense. This was Kyle Rudolph on Zach Ertz.
Well, Zach's a guy that's just really has been consistent throughout his whole career. Obviously, numbers were significantly higher early in his career in Philly, bounced around in Arizona, then Detroit briefly last year. And those are the type of guys that just show up at work every day. They do what they're supposed to. They're in the right place at the right time. And when the opportunities come to them, they're going to take advantage. And that's exactly what he did this year. He got with a phenomenal young quarterback that knew his tight end was going to be in the right place at the right time, and he could count on him. And then ultimately, that's when you see the production. I don't think there's anything that changed in Zach as a player. Still the same guy that he was the last handful of years. It's so much of this is about opportunities, and Zach made the most of his opportunities this year.
What do you think the state of the union is at the tight end position right now? We're seeing one of the greatest ever, Kelce, playing this title. But just seeing what Ertz did for Daniels this year, I just feel like it's one of those ultimate safety valves for a young QB kind of spots.
Absolutely. I mean, they always say, like, the tight end is the quarterback's best friend. And, you know, you think about the position of the tight end, the routes they're running, the ability as a quarterback. You can just kind of throw it anywhere. You don't have to make a perfect throw. You know, tight ends, usually bigger body guys, you can kind of throw the ball away from defenders, so they're safer throws. But it is. It's the tight end position is one that's a ton of fun to follow. There's so many guys playing at a high level. We get to see two of them. You guys saw Dallas Goedert in the division. Incredible tight end. And then obviously Travis is one of the best to ever do it. So we'll see two good ones on Sunday.
All right, last one on the tight ends from you. I want to ask you, all time, let's put you on the spot, who do you think the best tight end is? And then currently, your favorite guy of this new era to watch?
I think Travis has made a very strong case to being the best ever. I never really thought we'd see anyone have the production that Tony Gonzalez had, and yet Travis is passing all of those, and he's now being mentioned in categories of Jerry Rice, which there's receivers that haven't been able to surpass Jerry's numbers. So I think Travis has made a strong case whenever he decides to hang him up as being one of the greatest to ever play the game. And then now, I think when you talk about young tight ends, you look at the rookie in Vegas and Brock Bowers, what he did this year, numbers that he put up. Just, again, they're good for receivers, and their only job is to catch the ball. They don't have to block anybody. They don't have to be involved in anything besides catching the football. So Brock's definitely a one. We knew when he was a sophomore at Georgia he was going to be a first-round pick and one of the good tight ends in the NFL. So it was fun to see him come to the league and really live up to almost unrealistically high expectations.
Kyle Rudolph, one of the top tight ends in the NFC over the last several years with Zach Ertz, talking about not only the impact he had, but the position. Let's start with Ertz. I mean, he's so right. When you go draft a quarterback, if you have a young guy at that position, Danny, and what a smart thing by DQ and by Adam Peters, you'd better get a tight end who can help them. I don't just mean catch passes, which is a big deal.
Right.
I mean helping get guys lined up. Like, there's no better friend to Jaden Daniels this year in that offense than Ertz, and we saw it from training camp day one.
100%. And it's why in the offseason, again, I was wrong about this, but in general, my approach was, let's get more in here for Jaden Daniels. I wanted that at the receiver position, too. I want that, like, when in doubt, I can just throw it to the dependable veteran, my Keenan Allen or whatever. And Ertz really came on as the year went on as well, which is atypical of kind of what's been going on with him over the past couple seasons. As he's run out of gas or been hurt or whatever, he really got better as the season went on. I mean, again, he's never going to be a dynamic catch and rumble for 20, 30, 40, 50 yards or whatever. But the ability that he had to make some of those huge, enormous crunch time in tight, narrow window catches to just make this offense indefensible at times, just cannot overstate the importance right there to have that dependable option. Again, that one touchdown against Atlanta, as they're sitting there, the broadcast is like, they go to Ertz in these kinds of situations. They know that. The team knows that. The defense knows that. And lo and behold, it goes to Ertz. Touchdown. Go to the playoffs. Hands catch in traffic. Amazing.
We're in a golden era for tight ends, man. This is such a good run of tight ends, Danny.
Yeah,
it's not about to end. I mean, Kelce's getting older. You see some of these guys that are like Ertz about to retire, but Brock Bowers caught 112 balls this year. Trey McBride, people sleep on him, I think, because he's an Arizona Cardinal. He caught 111 passes this year.
Because he also had, like, no touchdowns until week 17 or whatever, but, like,
true.
That guy's so good.
So good. But, yeah, those are athletes, too. Like, the catch totals are one thing, but the yards, man. Brock Bowers went for 1194. Rudolph's right. He's like, he kind of put up really good wide receiver numbers. McBride, 1146. Kittle went for 1100. Kelsey, 800-plus. Jonnu Smith,
yeah, Jonnu Smith,
800-plus. I didn't realize he had that good a year in Miami.
Yeah. Like, as you said, it's everybody's got one. Everybody's got an athletic freak. Or, you know, super productive tight end, like kind of in the Zach Ertz mold, right? The box out, get mine, you know, as Kelsey wasn't anywhere near as dynamic as he's been in the past in terms of yardage totals and the like. But everybody, it seems like a David Njoku a handful of years ago would have been a superstar. Now he's like option 11 over a Cleveland team that can't get right, you know. But like, they don't make people like that. He's so big, so strong, so fast, et cetera. But yeah, it is a great time for tight ends.
Moose Johnston helps run the United Football League. Of course, calls games on Fox as well. He's going to join us next. We're live at Radio Row ahead of Super Bowl 59 on Grant and Danny.